Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Space blankets are wrapped around runners at race finish lines, and memory foam that once protected astronauts is now found in many of our pillows and mattresses. Space exploration and the technology necessary to do it have transformed many lives here on Earth. And the Outer Space Treaty of 1967 says that, quote, the exploration and use of outer space should be carried on for the benefit of all people, irrespective of their degree of economic or scientific development. But of course, that hasn't necessarily been the reality. But that is what my next guest is working toward. Danielle Wood is an assistant professor leading the Space-Enabled Research Group at MIT's Media Lab. Danielle, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Of all the ways that you could work to advance sustainable development and justice here on Earth, why focus on space exploration and space-related technologies?
Space is truly a global location. It's really the providence or the heritage of all humans. Ideally, you could see distributions of benefit to people around the world, benefiting from both the services of space and activities in space. Space is one of several global commons like this, including the ocean, Antarctica, the atmosphere. These are all places where we're reminded that we're not just citizens of countries, but of the planet. And they are places that are somewhat fragile to the way that we live as a society.
Can you give us an example of how you see space-based or space-related technologies specifically supporting and contributing to sustainable development goals?
We identify six particular space technologies that are already shown to have contributions to sustainable development. The six technologies we focus on primarily include satellite Earth observation, satellite communication, satellite positioning, which also helps us with navigation and gives us really accurate timing services. Outside of satellites, we also look at the knowledge and scientific activities gained from microgravity research and human spaceflight. Astronauts who are in orbit around the Earth, such as at the space station, their bones and muscles experience something that's very much like rapid aging because they're not exercising them as they normally would within one gravity. And it helps us understand the experience of people who are aging on Earth. The other two examples are broad technology transfers. You had some great examples up front of items that were invented for some kind of space activity, but were redesigned and transferred to the rest of society. And the final area is fundamental scientific research. There's a lot of economic research that shows that if you want to be good at innovation, you should be funding basic research in the country because you're getting excellent knowledge in your team members. You're going to have infrastructure for computing and for data management. And there's many other links to this kind of benefit.
Danielle Wood, as you go through that list of six technologies that are space related that could support sustainable development and justice here on Earth, half of them, three of them, are essentially satellite technology. And I wonder what you see as the need or some of the next steps with regard to satellite technology. Is it just about expanding the use and the access to satellites and their services? Or is it about putting different sorts of sensors, different capabilities on satellites? Or is there a more fundamental way that we need to redesign our satellite system in order to make it more equitable and more just?
There's a lot of great stories to talk about with satellites because there's a lot of unique missions, and it's an exciting time. Right now, there's a lot of innovation happening throughout the satellite community. Both governments and private organizations and universities are trying new things. Traditionally, the way you build satellites has been very conservative, meaning we knew the satellites were expensive and expensive to launch, so we were very careful when we launched them, to make sure they worked really well. So the traditional idea was to build large-scale satellites that could last for a long time in space and make sure that they were going to work for a long period without mistakes. These days, when we think about satellites, you still have that traditional version. A lot of important government weather satellites use that model, and they do work for a great long time in space, sometimes decades. Another model is what's called the small satellite, and one of my areas is thinking about small satellite engineering. Small satellite is not just the size, it's the philosophy of how you build them. And the concept could be, instead of building one larger satellite that can work for a long time and do many functions or carry many sensors, think about building groups of smaller satellites that can be replaced more often, are more affordable to build, and can be replaced if they do fail. So there's lots of experiments now. There are companies like the company called Planet. They're operating on the order of 200 satellites orbiting around the Earth in what we call low Earth orbit, which is a few hundred kilometers above the Earth. And they're taking imagery of everywhere on Earth every day. And they have different levels of detail. Some of them have about 3-meter resolution. And this kind of information provides much more frequent updates on what's happening with pictures.
I want to go back to this idea of small satellite. Obviously, enabling developing nations to be able to launch perhaps their own satellites that are smaller, they're more affordable, they're more adaptable, to be able to get the kinds of data that they want and need sounds great. But on the flip side of that, shorter lifespan, not spending as much time in space, higher numbers, smaller size, that all sounds like it could have a downside as well, which is more space trash, which you already mentioned as a sustainability issue in space and something that you're working on. So how do you see this trend towards smaller satellites, kind of in a net sense in terms of sustainability?
One of the opportunities we have to make an impact in this area is a collaboration with the World Economic Forum and several other partners, including the European Space Agency, as well as the University of Texas at Austin, and a company called Bryce Space Technology. So that council, working within the World Economic Forum, proposed that there should be a space sustainability rating. The rating is similar to what you might think of for other fields where we want to encourage business people and operators and governments to do something that's good for the environment.
Right. I mean, I've heard of like sustainable wood, sustainable building materials, for that matter, sustainable seafood ratings.
Great point. So many consumers do look for labels on their food to see if they're buying was coming from a sustainable kind of farming system and fair to the workers. People look for buildings to be certified with systems that show they're environmentally friendly. So we would like to have the same kind of positive pattern in the space community. So the Space Sustainability Rating aspires to have the same opportunity where operators of satellites, whether they're universities, government, or perhaps companies, satellite operators can voluntarily choose to be rated according to how sustainable their mission is. Now, sustainability here has this very concrete meaning. We're interested in how much a new satellite affects other neighbors in their likelihood of either having a collision or becoming debris. The issue is that in space today, it's a big place, but we have about 2,000 operational satellites now, but there's about 20,000 pieces of trash that are either old satellites or parts from old rockets, and many of them are not doing anything useful right now, and many of them are large enough to cause collisions and break into smaller pieces. So here the idea is to encourage satellite operators of all types to take practical steps and get credit for it if they try to reduce their risk of creating new space debris.
Daniel Wood, as you were listing the six technologies, space-related technologies that could support sustainable development goals here on Earth, half of those were satellites. The others were related to essentially knowledge and technologies developed as part of a space program that can translate to daily life. As the space arena has become more and more privatized, as private companies have started to play a larger role, and perhaps government-funded and government-run systems have played a smaller role, what does that mean for space sustainability going forward? I mean, you're talking about optional voluntary programs to be sustainability certified. You might have private companies that don't want to share what they've learned from their research or their technology development. Does it make it more difficult for space to be sustainable and to support sustainability here on Earth when the private sector plays such a large role?
I often hear people expressing that they believe that the private sector is getting a larger and larger role in space. And I think I disagree slightly with that summary. What you see right now is the private sector playing quite different roles than it used to, but it's always played a large role because throughout the era, starting in the 60s and going to the 70s, when we had government space programs establishing themselves and then looking for how to complete their work, you always saw the companies playing a key role in implementing the technology, helping to build and operate the technology. And they were often large companies. We've seen a lot of consolidation in the U.S. market, for example, where what starts off as small, separate companies grow into larger ones that end up doing very large government contracts. So that's still true. And the majority of spending in space in the world has a couple different channels. You have a few very large government programs, and you also have a very large commercial satellite television program, where that's a major market that makes profit. A lot of other activities in space don't make much profit right now, but there are many people who are working on that. But the longer-term question for me is asking, what will be happening as new actors, whether they're companies or governments, try to do things that we've not yet seen in space but are becoming more and more feasible? I, of course, aspire to see every country free to operate in space and explore scientific and exploration activities that benefit its people, but in a way that doesn't reduce the long-term safety and sustainability of space for others. This is a fundamental tension, actually.
I was going to ask you about that, because we are seeing more countries getting into space exploration, launching satellites, attempting to land vehicles on the moon. Do you think we are moving in a more sustainable direction, a more equitable direction, perhaps? Or are things just getting a bit more chaotic and harder to maintain sustainability?
So there are established guidelines, for example, to address issues called planetary protection, the question of whether we're going to accidentally take germs or other organic material to a place like Mars or the moon when we don't mean to. I do want to put a note of caution, though, because we're going to see a few things in the next few years we've never seen before. Companies would like to go and try to extract materials and do mining on asteroids. Different groups are preparing to have commercial projects on the moon, but of course with some government affiliation or government support. I think it's wonderful, but I do hope that we can be a little careful, because we have a chance to do things that once we do them, we can't undo them. I actually would like to propose that we think of locations like the moon and Mars and asteroids a bit like parks, the way we consider national parks and state parks in the U.S., because they are places that are precious and beautiful and that have not been greatly altered by humans yet. And I think that future generations deserve to enjoy the moon as this beautiful natural environment that it is today.
Danielle Wood leads the Space-Enabled Research Group at MIT's Media Lab. Danielle, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And that's our show. Until next week, I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.